Welcome back to Three Shots and a Dot, and here's what's coming up in today's episode.
The point I'm trying to make is, I don't think India approached that innings well outside Rohit. When you got someone playing really well, you need the rest of the team to sort of bat around him and not try and steal the limelight.
It's impossible for me to think that they don't know that the world knows what Indian cricket is doing, and they're still doubling down on The View on air. I mean, can you be that dumb?
Chris Jordan got a hat trick in that England game. Good bowling, and then you get Pat Cummins, who seems to get a very unorthodox hat-trick where the ball's just being caught in the boundary all the time.
Markham says, you know, they want to go hard early, kill the game off. They don't bat deep enough to do that, you know what I mean? Because if you lose 2-3 wickets, you're under the pump already.
Basically, the West Indies game was essentially a quarterfinal, and now we're in knockout. You can't afford a bad game, so we just need to put all of the discussions aside, get behind the team 100%, and just support the boys.
So the Australian World Cup dream hangs by the skin of its teeth. A magnificent showing from India holds Australia's hopes all on Afghanistan versus Bangladesh now. That game ended up being quite spectacular. India scoring really high at the start, and then the Aussies just couldn't find their way. And I'm not sure what you guys made of that game.
So yeah, overall, I think a good display by India. Rohit played well, played really well, unlucky not to get 100. But I was kind of disappointed in the way that they approached the inning. So one batsman was going really well. Then Rishabh Pant tried to do punt-like things and, you know, went for the big shot. But that's Pant, you know, he's never at fault. It's always, oh, that's Pant. Anyway, sarcasm. The point I'm trying to make is, I don't think India approached that innings well outside Rohit. When you got someone playing really well, you need the rest of the team to sort of bat around him and not try and steal the limelight. Okay. Surya did the same thing when he came in. Did you see how Surya played with Rohit? He just played second fiddle. And when Rohit really struggled, then he tried to take the risk and, you know, go for the big shot in those overs. Nevertheless, they made 200. I think, you know, by some chance they made 200. And we know that 200 is a biggish score in these types of wickets. So it wasn't going to be as easy to chase down as you would, you know, like in a subcontinent track. But then if I was disappointed with India's middle order, I was even more disappointed with Australia's middle order. It's like almost brainless cricket came to play there. So Warner kind of, you know, actually Head stole the show at the beginning. Warner got out, then Head and Marsh were going well, cool. Marsh got out and, you know, things were going well. Maxwell came in and started, you know, pumping the ball around the track. I think they were at a point where they needed like 10 and over of the last 6 or 7 overs, and they were cruising. Maxwell was in, hitting the spinners for sixes, taking the pressure off Head. And yeah, they lost the plot after that. And I know you're going to touch on it later, but I'd like to touch on that Aussie batting when they played Afghanistan, because a similar thing happened. But yeah, overall, you know, disappointed with the middle order, the approach of the game. But yeah, I think I'm also just disappointed that India won deep down. So I wanted Aussie to go through.
Yeah, no, I think I have similar feelings in the sense that I really wanted India to get knocked out just because of all of the controversy around it. I think that's what they deserve. And we'll touch on it in a bit. But as far as the batting goes, Rohit just looked like he was batting on a different track. I get what you're saying, Coombs, in the sense that, you know, all of the batsmen kind of gave their wickets away at the end. But I thought everybody else struggled. Apart from Surya Kumar and Hardik, obviously he just yet to go in those last 3 overs. So you can't really look at anything in his batting. But all the other batsmen, they struggled. I mean, Pant, he hit 2 shots, but that's 2 of 13 balls. The other 11 balls, he looked like he was struggling. And even when he got out, you could see he completely misread that ball and it just skied up. It wasn't like he was even going for a slog. He just tried to play it off into the leg side and he popped up. And I was even surprised how high it actually went. But, and it was a similar theme for the other wickets as well. I don't think Australia bowled particularly well. Stark obviously came back after getting a hammering in the first over. But I think that innings was all down to Rohit. If Rohit scored 30, then India were looking at 160, if that. So, I mean, credit where it's due. I mean, he batted brilliantly. So, to get to 200 in this World Cup, I mean, that's fantastic. And I think it was the highest score scored against Australia in any T20 World Cup. So it was definitely going to be a challenge in total.
Something you pointed out there, which is making me think as well, it seems like it is about individuals here, because sometimes when you're on a very slow track, no one makes a score. When you're on a very fast track, everyone comes in and, you know, has a party. But if I think back, and you're kind of right, it's a game of one or two individuals. Even the Aussie innings was just Travis Head.
And that's just the way he bats. I mean, if Australia had batted first, you would have probably done the same thing. Whether you would have scored the same runs, we'll never know. But I mean, Rohit said at the toss that he would have also chosen to bowl first. So you never know what could have happened. And it is game down to individuals. And I think we'll touch a bit more on that when you speak about South Africa. But one thing I wanted to mention that I found quite funny was it's almost as if this whole India farce is just becoming so much more of a joke. And I noticed it in the fielding innings as well. So in the Australian innings, when I think, who was it? Mitchell Marsh, I think he dropped a catch. And then the commentary team were all over Australia about the fielding throughout the whole tournament. They're doing so terribly, dropping catches. This is unlike Australia, da, da, da. And then in the Indian innings, Jadhav dropped a catch. And all of a sudden, the tune changed. It was like, oh, he hit the ball into the wind and the ball died on Jadhav. And now in this World Cup, we've seen good fielders drop catches. And I'm like, come on, guys. Yeah, it's almost as if, just say, you're cheating and you get caught and your wife is almost on your trail. Then you close up shop and you do things quite well. And you don't let it be known. But now these people, they're double down. They're doubling down on the view, and everybody can see that it's so freaking obvious. So
absolute joke. the Aussie feeling has been shocking. I think they've put the most catches down from all the sides of this World Cup. But I get that point completely, because fair fact that the commentators always seem to have this agenda. I stayed up and watched the South Africa match in the morning, and I'll touch on that later. But the commentary there as well, same story. It just seems like there's this bias that comes across very, very readily in the commentary, and it's actually quite irritating to watch. I watched the last 5 overs of that game with the sound off, just to make the point. But yeah,
I also think, I mean, these commentators, it's impossible for me to think that they don't know that the world knows what Indian cricket is doing, and they're still doubling down on the view on air. I mean, can you be that dumb?
I think
to make it so blatant when you're already under a microscope. Everybody is looking at you and saying, how does India know when they're playing the semi-final, who they're playing? And then you still go and hammer the point in even further. I mean, it's either brainless commentary or there's some agenda that they've been instructed to go by.
Yeah, with the amount of money going around, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a clear prerogative in the studio saying, you're not allowed to say X, Y, and Z, because if you do, we've already come to the conclusion that the whole World Cup has been planned around viewership in India. And it would seem dumb if there isn't a sort of agenda at the back saying, commentary team, no. You don't. How many times have we heard them talking nonsense about Kohli? Like none. It's like, oh, he struggled, cool, walk over it.
And on that note, I saw that Mark Butcher actually had an interview.
Yes, he roasted, I saw that piece.
He roasted
Yeah.
And he would have normally been in the commentary box at one of these tournaments. So I'm not sure whether he took a stand or whatever it is. But
it's probably why he's not.
He went in hard. He actually went in hard.
Yeah, look, it's a classical case of, you know, you've got to be as impartial as possible and not on the side of rumors. So, but when something is blatant and obvious, and it's not being said, then of course it's who's your employer at this point? And you know, do you want to speak against them or for them?
100%. And beyond that, even the commentary. We've watched the IPL, and you watch quite a bit of it. You would notice that the commentary has changed quite a lot. It's a lot of the same people in the studio, Arsha Bogle and Ravi Shastri and the likes. They were all very different about the way they commentated during the IPL on the Indian players. Now, everyone is a saint. Absolutely no issues. Hardik is a good example. Hardik Pandya, there were interviews with Ravi Shastri saying that even while coaching the India team, never knew him to be a captain, slated the guy in public repeatedly. Now, what a hero. he comes here and he's like, it's that story that you predicted would punt all over again. And they do it across the board. But onto the actual game, aside from all the politics that India has brought into cricket, Rohit Sharma played quite well. And it was refreshing to see him find that touch again, because we know he can do it, even with his age now. The thing is, he hasn't shown it for quite some time, including in that IPL that I just mentioned. But brilliant knock. He took the bowler's one. That 29-run Stark over was the biggest over that Stark has ever been slapped for in his career in T20s. Absolutely ridiculous. Okay, Stark eventually got him. But again, I share the same view as you guys. If it wasn't for Rohit, they would have really struggled there. And no one seemed to go about the game in the right way. I'd agree with that. Shivam Dubey, their magnificent finisher, that is the best thing since sliced bread, basically went at
118.
Yeah, apparently you can't bowl spin to him because the ball will go 200 meters. But I think he hit 1 6 off the spin, two maybe, and then the rest were dots. So
yeah, they were all hyping. They were all hyping the Zampa over that. Oh, Shivam Dubey is going to go after him. Blah, 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 blah.
The one thing that they got lucky with now is that Hardik has found form. And he's knocked a few innings now that kept them in. I mean, today, that knock of 27 of 17 or whatever it is, game-changing. Even though he was kind of forced into playing that way, it's two vital knocks in a row. And it might be the thing that saves them going into the semis.
So the thing I was critical about Hardik was that when he was the captain at Gujarat, he seemed to be a very selfish player, you know, opening the ball, even the ball is swinging, coming and batting at number three on a good batting track or number four. And now he's forced to play that role that he made his name playing, coming in right at the end for Mumbai Indians and just smacking the ball all over the place. And if you look at the shots that Hardik used to play for Gujarat and the shots he plays now, that weird flat batted shot he played for four or six today. That was Mumbai Indians, right? That was Mumbai Indians. He's never played shots like that for Gujarat because he was too circumspect. And I think, well done. Well done to Hardik. I'll eat my words, you know, because he's doing what he's supposed to do in the side and he's not as selfish as we thought Hardik would be.
I'll give him his credit. But I just think he still feels he has a chip on his shoulder. He's still feeding his ego. Like, he went for runs today, and I'm not sure if you caught the last two balls. Yeah, no. If you caught the last two balls, I mean, India won the game. But I think it was Rishabh Pant behind the stumps, and he threw the ball awkwardly. Hardly caught it awkwardly. I don't know whether it caught his finger or something.
Yeah.
But then he started berating Pant for that. I mean, like, come on.
I'll defend him with that one. Rohit also had a go at punt in that same little segment. Rohit also had a go at punt because there's absolutely no need. Punt was just being dumb and then he laughed about it afterwards. Throwing the ball across the stuff, both the batsmen are in the crease. Like, what are you doing, clown? And I think that might come more from the point that they know punt is a clown.
Punt is a clown. I get that. But I want to back prove up because I saw a video, like a short clip of Hardik Pandya receiving a water bottle from someone on the boundary and then, you know, giving it back in a very funny way. And I'd encourage you to go and, you know, Google it. I can't remember who the person was, but he was someone kind of in the Indian setup, has played games for India, but not a big name like Virat Kohli. And just the respect shown, it's things like that. It's those little things where this guy came and gave.
Little things.
You know, he gave Pandya the bottle, he drank the water and just throws it on the floor. When the guy's right next to you. And then he tells him, he has the audacity to pick it up because it's inside the boundary, not outside the boundary. Like, I mean, come on. You know what I mean? These are your teammates.
Credit
he's playing well, but I still don't like him. So I've got personal bias, so.
So the other thing I think we could move on to now is that Australia-Afghanistan game. And it was quite funny for me to wake up and look at that score because you remember what happened the last time these two teams met. Australia
Maxi
were like,
and the 200.
They're like 77 for 7 or some shit. And then, you know, Maxi just took that game away from them. Anyway, nevertheless, they had little heart flutterings because he made about 60 in this game and he was the only one that actually made a score. Two things I saw there was, to go back on Kuv's earlier comment about one man playing the show, if you think about it, the Afghanistan innings had the same thing. Gurbaz and Ibrahim Zadran at the top, they built the innings really well and they went really well to make 110, 120 somewhat. And then the batting just collapsed. So it was just those two guys. If they didn't build the innings so well, you know, they wouldn't have made that one, whatever they made, 140, 150.
Yeah. And I'm glad that Afghanistan... I'm glad that they reverted back to them opening the partnership, because the whole Zazai experiment in the India game, that failed completely. So you can see if those two guys don't score runs, then Afghanistan struggle.
Yeah, look, I mean, Gurbaz is also a hard-hitting batsman and he showed a different level of maturity, you know, playing that game. I just thought, and again, you know, watching the highlights, not really watching the game. But then I want to be critical again of Australia's approach at that total. I mean, they were just going for it, like no respect. You know what I mean? And
I also didn't watch the game, but when I saw the scorecard, I mean, the game went to the 20th over. So were they really going for it, or were they too circumspect?
No, sure, but I mean, it went to the 20th over. I'm not sure. But when you're chasing a score like that, there's scope for batsmen. You know, instead of taking a single, you don't have a mammoth total in front of you. You could have done what Gurbaz and Zadran did. And, you know, approach this thing nicely. But no, Marsh and Warner and even Head, they're all going for it. So Maxi came in and went for it, but it came off for him. But I still think the other batsmen could have played a better innings, taken singles where on offer.
I'm not disappointed. So Paddy Cummins can take his two hat-tricks and go back to Australia.
I'll admit, I come into this conversation with a bit of a bias, because ever since Pat Cummins started off his World Cup prediction conversation with, we're going to win it, whoever joins us in the final doesn't matter, I've been, these guys are too cocky, they're going to suffer for it. And you are right, they approached the game in that very same way. Somewhere around the middle, I watched most of the game, and then towards the end of it, actually fell to sleep. But somewhere around the middle of the Afghanistan innings, you could see that it started to hit home a little bit. They were taking it very easy against Afghanistan.
That's what I'm saying. It looked like they didn't give a shit. That's exactly what I'm saying.
The drop catches, and it wasn't just drop catches, fielding errors repeatedly. And the difference was, it didn't seem like anyone thought it would be a problem. You didn't get a lot of chit chatter going, guys, come on, like amp each other up in the field, like we should be winning this game. It was just like, it's Afghanistan. And then I saw a video of the Afghani change room afterwards. And the first thing they said was, it was the 23rd of June. They remember the date. I don't, but they did remember the date that Maxwell made that score. And they said, today is also the 23rd. And now you're going to remember us. And then Gurbaz said, I was waiting for them. From the time I saw the draw, I was waiting for them. So there was a clear motivation for Afghanistan. Unfortunately, the Aussie just couldn't match
the intensity. You know, the funny part is, we're talking like it's over. Knowing us, Afghanistan will go and lose and then they'll be back.
My point to this whole thing was, you know, I think a few episodes ago we mentioned that the Afghanistan actually has a likable team compared to the other teams. And again, that shows that, you know, they looked up to this game. They gave the game the respect it needs. The way they approached the game was very professional. And I'm glad you picked up that Australia threw the game away. They could have easily won that game, but they just gave it no respect at all. Like, you know, even if we're 7 down, we win the game, don't worry. It's only 150 on the board.
Just a quick point on Kuv's thing about Pat Cummins' hat-trick. Pollock made a joke about it in the commentary as well. It's like, Chris Jordan got a hat-trick in that England game, good bowling. And then you get Pat Cummins, who seems to get a very unorthodox hat-trick where the ball's just being caught in the boundary all the time. And he's done it twice. Just alluding to the fact that there's been no good bowling there. But now we have a third shot joining us. And Divi's come straight from a match. So representing us off-field and on.
Yeah, I just want to say Pat Cummins can
Why?
Because being a Sunrisers supporter, I have to bring this in here. Markram wins twice with the Sunrisers franchise in South Africa. And then they bring Pat Cummins as captain. into the Indian IPL, and unfortunately, Sunrisers lose in the final. Nevertheless, I just want Markham to do better than Cummins. Cummins is a cocky bastard, and I just hope Markham goes further than him. Thank you.
But just another point on Afghanistan to something Boymam said in one of the previous episodes. Their depth and flexibility is astonishing. Yeah. I mean, they bowled 8 bowlers in that game.
It's crazy.
So,
I mean, Gulbuddin Naib came up with 4 wickets. Ridiculous. Like, it's a different man on a different day every single time. And it's something similar to what we've been seeing with South Africa. There's a player popping up all the time, and it's because there's a lot of quality there. They don't rely on one man. I mean, we've spoken about one man situations recently with India. Rohit failed, for example. But it's crazy how good they are. And I think people are finally taking notice and giving them the credit and respect they deserve, because they've been playing good cricket for some time. But we always saw them as, Afghanistan are another team, not one of the teams. They definitely put themselves in the hat now for being regarded as one of the bigger teams in any World Cup situation or any big tournament situation. So we're back for FIFA round 2, and now the non-FIFA question of the day. South Africa's highest ever partnership in a T20 World Cup came in a second wicket stand between Quinton de Kock and Riley Rousseau versus Bangladesh at the SCG in 2022. How many runs did they score in this partnership?
115.
Okay. Divi goes 115. Kums?
130.
Okay. Kov?
138.
Okay, so you're all wrong, but Kov's the closest again. The partnership was actually 168. So Kov is first, Kum second, and Divi is third. So for Kov then, can you name the top 5 batsmen with the most 50-plus scores for South Africa in T20 World Cups?
Okay, Quinny.
Quinton de Kock is number 2.
Faf
du Plessis is number 6.
AB
de Villiers is number 1.
David Miller
is number 8. So that's 2 bounces used. The next one equals a steal.
JP.
JP Dumini is number 9. That'll come to Kums. We'll let you steal first.
The mighty hash.
The mighty hash is number 4.
Again.
Now, because there is still one more left, Divi also have an opportunity to steal. Give you one guess.
I'm going to go, because I remember last week you said this guy was one of the highest run scorers. I'm going to go Jack Cullis.
Thinking, man, it's number 3. Jack Cullis is definitely there. Now, for the fact that all of us love this guy, why has no one mentioned number 5, Aiden Markram?
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, the top, AB de Villiers has 5 50-plus scores. Highest score of 79.
I was surprised Miller wasn't there.
Yeah, Miller's sitting on 2. Miller's sitting on 2. Herschel Gibbs with 2. Faf with 2. Markram has 3. Quinny has 4. Carlos and Hamla also have 3. So Kov ends on 0 points after both guys steal from him. Now the next question. So to Kums, can you name the top 5 batsmen with the most runs, all countries included, at T20 World Cups?
Chris Gayle.
Chris Gayle is not up there.
Virat Kohli.
Number 1, Virat Kohli.
David Warner.
Number 5, David Warner.
Joss Butler.
Number 4, Joss Butler.
Kane Williamson.
Kane Williamson is number 10. So your second bouncer, want to go for a steal?
Rohit Sharma.
Rohit Sharma is number 2. You got 1 to go for clean sweep. 5.
Oof.
4. 3.
Tilakaratne Dilshan.
That's your third one. Now I'll come to Kov to steal.
I'm going to try Baba.
Nope. It's not Baba's. Divi?
Mahela Jayawardene.
You are on the money. Mahela Jayawardene sits at number 3. So since no one got it, Virat Kohli currently is on 1,207 runs. This does not include the runs made in today's game because Rohit Sharma would have gone top. So the hardest question of the lot then for you, Divi. Can you name the top five South African bowlers that have the lowest bowling average in T20 World Cups? Only bowlers that bowled more than 15 overs will be considered.
What have you done?
I'm going to go Morne Mokkel.
Morne Mokkel is not it.
Imran Tahir.
Imran Tahir is number three. Ding, ding.
Arek Nokia must be here.
Arek Nokia is number two. Ding, ding again.
Let's go Dale Steyn.
That's your second bouncer.
KG.
That's your third bouncer. I'm going to allow someone to steal. They'll come to Combs first.
I'm going to try Jack Cullis.
Nope, not Jack. We'll come to Combs.
Because he kind of bowls a lot, but not enough. You know what I mean?
Let's go Marco.
Not Marco Janssen. So everybody's all wrong. This was a hard question. No, not Pollock either. This list is bloody hard. That's why. Okay, that's why it was the hardest. So the top man,
Mananta Hayward,
Shaun Langerfeld.
Shaun Langerfeld. Oh,
Shaun Langerfeld. Okay. He's bowled 16 overs. has an average of 9.45. Yeah. Number two is Nokia. Number three is Tahir. Number four, Tabrez Shamsi, an average of 13.65.
No way. And he gives runs like that in the off day.
Shamsi has 20 wickets currently, has only gone for 273 runs.
Wow.
How many overs is the ball?
39.
That's not bad, eh?
He has a strike rate of 11.7.
What's the economy? Must be like 6 or 5.5 or something.
Seven.
Yeah, because he goes for 10 and then he goes
number
for 3.
Number five on the current list is a man that bowled 19 overs all in the 2024 World Cup, Otneil Bartman. So what that means is that Combs adds 4 to his 5 and sits on 9 at the top. Divi adds 4 to his 3 from last week and sits on 7. And Combs, unfortunately, sits on 3 with a duck today. So yet again, though, no Fifer. We will hopefully get it at some point soon. That game between Afghanistan and Bangladesh takes place early in the morning. It is still completely open. I mean, if by some stroke of luck, Bangladesh learn how to play cricket again and then beat them by 200 runs, they technically could still qualify. But it's between Afghanistan now and Australia. And if Afghanistan win, we play them in the semi. And now South Africa obviously through after another nail-biting finish against the West Indies. I've got my box top on because I think this is the same thing. As I said previously, it's a 1 point run all the way till we win the cup. I predicted at the outset, I'm going to stick with it. The box won at Twickenham. These guys won in the West Indies. And I think we're going to keep the box flavor going so that South Africa comes out tops in their semi. Now, the South Africa-West Indies game, what did we think?
Again, I think disappointing from Riza. I think we discussed in the last episode whether they should go Rickleton now. I think now it becomes a bit tough. Do you chuck Rickleton into a knockout game semi-final without having a bat in 3 weeks or whatever it is? That's where the difficulty comes in. I think it was interesting, the bowling tactics, bowling Rabada so late, only bowling him 2 overs. I mean, that was interesting. It worked out. It went well. The batting again, it's difficult to know, you know, what's going on with that batting lineup. I mean, facing down that score, they didn't seem like, you know, they got close, they were in a good position, and then just threw it away completely. We need people to take responsibility. Batsmen are experienced now, and you know, just throwing around. I think Klaassen, okay, he got a good one, the one that bounced on him. Someone like Stubbs, I think he needs to mature a bit more. He didn't need to play that shot at that time.
Not at all.
Even guys like Keshav as well. I mean, you expect them to do the business with the ball, but I mean, at that point as well, he didn't really need to play that shot. I mean, it was 13 off 11, and then he just goes on a swing. So you know, the guys just need to start taking responsibility and seeing a game.
Just to jump in there, Markram mentioned it in his post-match interview. He says that he's always been a fan of guys going harder than trying to take the game by the scruff of the neck, so to say. I'm paraphrasing. But he did say that he thinks that what happened, I'm assuming from himself as well, because he is included in that middle of the innings knock where it went slightly south. He says that they went too hard trying to kill the game off immediately rather than someone deciding, okay, wait, we probably need to tonk it around a little bit more before we can go. And they try to seal the game off early rather than taking it to the last over, which is where the problem, where they ran into problems. And I think, fair enough, he said this, but between four or five really senior pros there now, surely there has to be some thinking, as you're saying. Surely there has to be a little bit of nous. We've gotten away with it again. Rizal is still in there. And I don't know. That Rickleton conundrum, I would still do it. But, yo, this is a very tough call from the selectors going into the semi.
That's a tough call.
Yeah.
Look, I would also do it.
I'll do it too. You're not going to get worse. The kid comes
in the game that he batted,
10,
he scored what, like good. 19 of 25 or whatever it was. So.
Yeah. So if the kid comes in and makes 20 of 10, I'm happy. I'll take that.
Yeah. And you know, just back to your point, Boymam, where Markram says, you know, they want to go hard early, kill the game off. They don't bat deep enough to do that. You know what I mean? Because if you lose 2 or 3 wickets, you're under the pump already. I think if you're someone like England who's bats 8, 9, 10, because Mark Wood can have a go now and then. Then sure, go for it. But
to hold you right there, right? We saw the game England versus USA. They needed to do the same thing. They needed to go really hard. But Butler took it right to the end when the game was secure. The game was, you know what I mean. Then he went and hit 5 sixes in 1 over or something like that. So the point I'm trying to make is even England, who had the backup, a little bit of brains comes into play, right? Secure your game. Get it down less than a run a ball and then go and, you know, make a statement about it after that 400.
Look, I think we mustn't discount the fact that it is always, I can imagine, quite annoying batting with Duckworth Lewis stern pressure because regardless of how well you're going, you kind of have to be at the ahead of that target every over, and especially having seen that Australia game that was constantly rained through and with the forecast being for showers throughout the game after it started initially. I can understand why they try to play a few shots, but Stubbs' wicket was, as we've said,
it's all timing.
Why do you go for that shot in that situation? We're going really well at the point. I think we could have walked the game from there, but then you make it difficult. And box again, it's the same thing. They make it difficult and then somehow entertainment value. Looks
but
like
in all three Super 8 games, I mean, KG came clutch in all three.
He did.
Yeah.
In the first match against USA, Shamsi bowled that terrible over. He came in, bowled an over for 2 runs, took a wicket. Against England, Bartman gave those 5 full tosses. He came in, bowled an over for 4 runs, took a wicket. And it was his cover drive that actually sealed the game. So
I just want to go back to that England game, bro. That game was done. That game was in the bag, finished. Bartman bowled brilliantly up until that point. They brought him back. Right? And we knew pitching the ball up on that wicket was it. Right? We saw that the whole game. And we didn't do that. And then as soon as he came back on, and I don't think it's Bartman that's come up with this plan because it's obviously a senior management coach saying, listen, go there and bowl Yorkers. And the first two disappeared. Fine. Okay. You tried it. You're not hitting it. Because if you get it right, then it's brilliant. Well done. Well bowled. But now hit that every single time. And then if you miss your mark slightly, and he missed it by a long way, why go back to it? The one ball that went for 1 run, it was the one that was into the pitch, back of a lane, the guy just clunked it down to...
So that was the one ball that he wasn't trying to do what he was supposed to do.
Exactly. And then the rest of it was just nonsense. Yeah, okay, and you say KG came in clutch. He got lucky with that ball.
He did, but at the end of the day,
you're talking about that as well. He bowled a full toss as well. So it was Bartman's 6 or Bartman's 5 in that over. And then KG bowled 2 full tosses afterwards. The first one got clapped.
And then the rest of the
And then the second on his catch. Yeah. No, but I'll give you that. KG has been good. Overall, because in that game, he got pumped. Was it the USA game or that game? He got pumped for 18 in the previous over that he bowled. So just coming back then, from that and then bowling a much better over, composing yourself, fair.
I see a lot of the people are saying that the way that South Africa are performing, they're getting rid of the choker's tag. The way I see it is that if they're getting rid of the choker's tag, they're just getting a new one. And that's like the worst, undefeated team in World Cup tournament history.
Yeah.
But they will be the worst, but they'll also be the first. Because no one's done it in the T20 World Cup.
This is a comment I made a long time ago, guys. The thing is that sometimes teams win World Cups and you wonder, like, how the hell did they win? But they play their best cricket right at the end. And if South Africa has to think about it now, how the hell do they even get here? They basically have a semi-final.
There was not one game that they dominated. Not one game.
That's the thing, right?
So six only, games,
it can
we were
only
all
get better from here.
Look, right? Look, they've been.
But it can only get better from here, right?
The ICC have been asking for entertainment value. We're just providing. We're being providers. That's all it is.
But we're helping
grow
say,
the sport.
I will say, basically, the West Indies game was essentially a quarterfinal.
Yeah.
And now we're knockout. You can't afford a bad game. So we just need to put all of the discussions aside, get behind the team 100%, and just support the boys.
I'll go back to what you said very early on, Kuf. You think, or at the time, you thought that we need to win every game to win this World Cup. And it holds true now because we're in the deep end. Yeah? And if we go and do it, hey, presto, what a side. No matter how we look back on it, however we've played, you win a World Cup for the first time as a South African. It's going to be a happy day. And
there's no room for error now. There's no hiding in a group or in a Super 8s where you can maybe, you know, lose a game, going on net run rate. Yeah, you just got to go pitch up on the day, perform, get into the final, win the final, and win the World Cup. That is the one very good thing
I think about this team. Even when people aren't performing, there's always someone that stands up. Marco Jansen, albeit he made like 10 runs at the end, he looked a picture of focus trying to get the team over the line. He's batted like absolute crap. But if you look at his face throughout that innings,
the whole tournament, exactly.
But
even
he just looked committed to the cause,
like,
this is what I'm here to do. I'm going to finish this. And when he clapped that six straight down the ground, you're like, where has this Marco Jansen been all along? Is it going to come now at the end of the tournament? That's perfect.
I thought he was caught.
Well, let's give credit to KG's little cover drive there.
A left-handed cover drive is always a thing of beauty.
That was class.
What a shot!
I mean, we were all in the same position. I think the whole country was. We knew that he was going to try something that ball. He had nothing to lose. Yes. So,
picture perfect.
That was beautiful. Question. All right. Next game. What's your lineup? Same lineup when Rickleton and Riza out, or you bring Bartman back in?
Ooh, it's a tough one. So
Shamsi should have batted number four.
Oh yeah, I saw that video. Coach, did you see me? Coach.
Yeah. Shamsi has so much confidence, it's not even funny. When he interviewed him
and
asked him,
he
thought he was going to do something like that.
Why do you only want me to take singles? I've won the country with singles. Do you remember that game in Chennai? I won the country a game with singles.
I was 100% sure at halftime his interview with whoever it was, I thought he was going to say, nah, this is going to be a walk in the park, and I'm like, Shamsi is such a cocky cake, he's going to say something dumb here and the game is gone. And then it so happens that he did say, hopefully we won't need Marco Jansen to make runs. But yeah, it came down to it. Oh, Tabresh. This is the reason why he uses this issue to make phone calls, because no one wants to listen to him. Shit. But anyway, fair news to him. He backed up his mouth there. Bowled pretty well. On a turning pitch.
I'll still leave him out for the semi.
I think
Guys, I think I think that may be a slower wicket. So
I'm personally not prepared to take that 50-50 gamble that we said. He's either going to take 3 for 20 or none for 40.
Yeah.
I know. Gamble with Botman, you know, okay, he had that one bad over, but come on, before that,
he was bad over, not his fault. That is a management and that is a decision. Prior to that,
he was like 2 overs for 6 runs.
Correct.
So he's been bowling well. So I'd play Botman over Shamsi and I'd bring Rickleton in. Even if he gets out for a duck, he's probably going to be the same as Reza. Getting out for a duck is better than scoring 10 or 15.
That's ridiculous. That actually kills the game. Getting out for a duck is better than wasting 15 balls. Yeah, you're right. Especially 15 balls on the power play.
The thing is, the selectors can't get in shit for picking Rickleton. Rickleton doesn't score any runs, fine. But what are you going to go with? You're going to go with Reza, who struggled the entire tournament.
On different pitches, even. It's not... I gave him a break up until the Super 8, saying that, well, it was horrible pitches. You start off bad on them, it's probably going to be a struggle to find
any sort of... The pitches are weird. Because I remember watching that England game, and South Africa batting first. And the commentators were adamant, South Africa batting shit. They're going to be 20 runs short.
But, Divi, just to cut you off there, before you joined us from your match, we were talking about how the commentary has been full of nonsense and there's clear bias all over the show. It was Nasser Hussain, yo, I am surprised Dale Steyn hasn't clapped him yet. The amount of crap that man chats, the wicket is extreme, even Owen Morgan, the wicket's extremely good, it's great for batting, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. England come into bat, they have a struggle for like one over and it's like, oh yeah, the pitch looks like it's slowed down.
Yeah.
What? What?
It's rubbish.
Absolute nonsense.
I mean, South Africa's batting, they're batting, and you know what, that made you anxious as watching the game, be like, we're going to get smashed here.
I think we were asking on our little group chat, we were asking, is this wicket slow or is it not? Because it looked like it was slowing up. But they kept saying, nah, it's great batting wicket. Like, agenda.
I'm always a conditions type of person. I look at conditions, I don't look at matchups, right? Because if it's batting, then you're going to have a high scoring game. If it's bowling, you're going to have an interesting low scoring. And it seems to me that commentators at large get this wrong. There's one guy, Deepdas Gupta. He's the pitch doctor. Deepdas is my man because whenever he reads something, but again, I'm just splitting hairs here now because he does this in IPL, but he does it well. But I agree with you to a large extent, at least 80% of the commentators, Matthew Hayden will come on there. Oh, this is a belter. This is a belter. And then they make 120 and he's like, it's a belter. Should be chased down. And then it's a close game, 120 close matchup. Oh yeah, the pitch slowed down. I think it dried when the sun came out, a bit of breeze, something dried up, took away the...
No ball.
Bullshit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I call bullshit as well. Like, fair enough. Bullshit, the argument will be that these are senior international cricket players, legends of the game. They should know more about a pitch than you and I. But they've been chatting shit, playing down.
That's the point of it.
The evidence suggests they know shit.
100%. And it's not like you're watching some second-rate batting line of bat on that pitch.
That's what I'm saying. As a junior member of the side, you would have once listened to these guys. Nasser Hussain as an example. When he said, look, the wicket is slow, then you would want to say, okay, the wicket is slow. Let me listen to him. Senior player.
That's the thing. And half-time there, I was like, should I even watch this thing? I mean, these guys said 180 is par. We ended up with like, what, 160 or something.
By the way, in the West Indies South Africa game, as the match was starting, just after the anthems, they called it and said that a par score is 180, but West Indies will be aiming for 200 here. Like, easy does it. But bro, what the... definitely wasn't a 200 pitch.
How could it be a 200 pitch? Have we seen a 200 game yet besides today's one against India? Have we seen any
other? They were 1 or 2, but it wasn't 200 play 200. Oh, it was, one-sided game, 200.
It was again individuals, not even
exactly.
There's some special tech rolling around the box there because everyone's going off on a tangent.
That is an IPL hangover. That what is it? It's an IPL hangover. It's like, oh my goodness, every 2020 game is going to be 200 plus or 270 because that's going 270. They're going to score less, so they're going to score like. Once he's going to score 200. You know, let's go.
It could be either hangover or all the cheap Indian whiskey.
Yeah.
It is irritating because you watch the game and you watch your team bat and the guys come there and say, oh, look, you're probably out of it now. You're 20 runs short. You got to bowl really well. And it's all rubbish at the end of the day.
So, on the assumption that South Africa makes the final, who do we want in the final?
I think at this point, I don't want India. I'll be honest with you. I don't want India.
That's a good one.
I don't want India.
Do you have a choice, though? Do we have a choice, though? Like, we've been saying this so many times. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if someone takes a rake and goes across that pitch before the game starts. At this point.
Well, they still got to get the cup done.
But really then it could backfire on Adil Rashid and Moeen Ali.
Yeah. You can take the horse to the water, you know?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. I also don't know. I know we don't have a choice because it's probably going to be India. But
I think England look good. I think England
I also think they look good.
Like the South Africa game. That South Africa game, they came back from the dead. I mean, we had them, what, like 66 for 4 or whatever it was. And you got Brook and Livingston in the middle there, in the middle order. Yeah. And the scary thought is that they are only needed if Salt, Butler, and Bairstow fail. I mean, that's a scary lineup. I'm more scared of England's batting lineup than India's.
Fun fact, Johnny Bairstow hasn't scored a 50 ever in a T20 World Cup.
Oh, wow.
Now this time.
Yeah, but this is like his third World Cup.
He's the one, the 270. So
yeah.
He's got it in him.
Yeah.
I just don't want India because, I mean, it must, at the end of the day, Kohli is Jew. He's Jew a big thing. Yeah, I don't want that thing to come.
No. That being said, I want Kohli to play every day. I want him. Because India would lose. Kohli can play a big innings in India at 150 strike rate.
I wouldn't want India. I wouldn't want India because of their bowling. If you're taking Jasprit for 20 runs, you did well.
Exactly.
Kuldeep looks dangerous, man.
Oh, yeah, he looks really good. He looks really good in that.
And Ashdeep, if the ball swings, Ashdeep.
No run. Problems.
And even we were talking down Akshar, but yo, even his overs, he's playing stump to stump.
I must keep my words. He scored at the bat, made some runs. Jadeja's been shocking. I don't know. Charu, we took him as a.
I think Maxwell also got the better of him today.
Yeah, but it's not just today. It's been the whole World Cup. I think he's got just a couple of wickets now. If he does have wickets, I'm not sure. But from the start, he went first three games without a wicket.
I don't think he's bowled more than 10 overs. So I don't think.
They were saying that Rohit doesn't trust him anymore, and I don't want to like. I don't like this thing about like create more issues and controversy. No, it's not a thing. But who's picking that's up what his it looks slack? Like.
Okay, but who's, so it looks like. Who's picking up his slack?
Yeah,
it's big boy Hardik.
Big boy. My captain. Exactly. My captain. people are gonna call me Arctic sympathizer, but yeah, watch that bruh start off and
you can suck his ass for like,
I'll back him, man. I'll back him.
But Rohit is definitely gonna be dangerous against our bowling lineup. I think
you see, I think Marco Janssen is the man, left arm pace.
Sure.
12 or 21. That he's gotten out to left arm pace.
Yeah.
That's my thing, right? So left arm pace, number one. Number two, Kohli hasn't played a big innings, and I just want to reiterate that point. That I don't think Kohli is gonna play 180 strike rate innings. So
yeah,
exactly.
I want Kohli to play us in the final and make 60 or 50, and that's gonna
the
entire game up for India.
That's the same argument as Riza. Whoever plays against South Africa wants Riza to play.
Exactly,
you're right. Even if he scores runs, it's not going to hurt you.
I mean, people are missing Bavuma without Bandri Sasprit.
Listen, I think it's a curse. If you are Kunden Dekar's opening partner, you are cursed.
Dead.
There's only one man that I've seen not be cursed batting with Quinny opening. It was Hashim Amla. looked class, man.
Oh, that's mighty good. Ash. Yeah, no, sure. The mighty sure, Ash. Sure, sure.
So just on South Africa now, who we're talking about who we're going to see in the final. Who would we prefer to play in the semi? Because that's undecided.
As much as I'd like to see Afghanistan go through, the thing is that I don't really want to meet them on that wicket. So I don't know. But if not Afghanistan, then who else?
Australia.
Yeah.
I'd rather take Afghanistan on that wicket than Australia in a knockout game.
Yeah.
No, I think I'll have Australia. I get you, but I'll have Australia because, you know, I think if Australia gets it wrong, they're going to get it horribly wrong that they have.
Yeah, it's the same thing you said about West Indies.
But Afghanistan, as I've also known, as much as we're singing their praises, it's complete hot and cold. There's no in-between. If they're on fire, they're on fire.
I worry that the arsenal they have to use against us on a slow pitch is massive. So much of spin in that side. They could even pop an extra one in. And then, yeah, we don't do well against spin. It's a fact. South Africa...
Well, we got Klaassen.
We've been saying that. We've been saying that.
Afghanistan team up.
I mean, Aidan Markram was also really good against spin for the most part. But now... I don't know what's going on.
No, but guys, the other thing...
I don't think it'll be a problem because you're going to have Rickleton scoring 40 of 20. So.
The other thing I think, let's not forget about his mindset, right? When you grow up playing cricket in Afghanistan or Bangladesh, when you're approaching a game and going for a score, for you to make 140 or 150 is a big thing, right? If South Africa are approaching a game and after 15 overs you had 100 runs, that's a bad thing. And then you lose the plot trying to go for 170. Whereas I think, you know, with these teams like Afghanistan, if they have to set the score on a day like that, they'll be much more comfortable not panicking when you're going at 7.5 and over on a slow pitch. Whereas I think in Australia or South Africa, if you're going at 7.5 after 15 overs, you're going to start panicking. Then, you know, because at that, you can't live with 150 or 140.
But I also think, like, I know you said, like, you're a conditions man. But I'm also a numbers man, probability statistics. In the sense that if Afghanistan and South Africa play, you know, okay, both of them, they're kind of on, like, even footing in terms of experience, making it to the final, winning the tournament. Australia, I mean, that's... For me, I'd rather just not...
They know how to win, though.
Like, they do know how to win.
I know, not them, but I think... You know, you put Australia to bat, for example, we'll roll them for 130, 140 on that wicket. Then it's up to us to go and chase that.
That's a brave call. Roll them for 130, 140.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Because they're going to get to, you know, 10 overs and then suddenly they had 70 runs and then panic. But I don't know. That's just my premonition that it'll be easier to roll Australia there than Afghanistan.
I mean, we're going to find out one way or another. For the semis, we don't know who we're going to play, but regardless, do we show some confidence back South Africa? Or do you want to be brave and call a team that hasn't even qualified for the semis? So the first semi, that is, South Africa versus somebody. Who wins?
South Africa.
Yeah, I think I've been the most cynical so far, but I think now it's knockout time. Got to get behind the team, so got to be South Africa. I'm going to go into that game, fingers, toes crossed, praying to every cricket god there is, and I'll be 100% behind the team.
Okay, I'm going to give you a long prediction. I say South Africa go, play Australia in the semi. Australia back first, or we put them into bat. We roll them for less than, let's say, 150. So 140 ideally. Anyway, we win the game, we go into the final. We play England in the final, right, because... They roll India. And South Africa has to give us a bit of a chest pounding. So they need two runs off the last ball. Marco Jansen dives, ball ricochets off his bat, goes to the boundary.
I'll take that.
South Africa win with Marco Jansen.
I mean, then England will win the World Cup morally. So. And then the other semi-final, India, England. So I know Coombs has given us his prediction. He says England will win. They'll roll them, apparently. Cove Divs?
I want England to win, 100%. I do not want to see India in the final.
Yeah, that's for work permit reasons, Kuf.
Oh.
You can't talk to me. But you can't talk to me.
This is the final. This place is going to be bumping, bro.
You kind of told you, living in England, born in South Africa, but Indian heritage. It's like, you don't know what you want to happen.
So you win regardless, is what you're saying.
I didn't tout either of these teams to make either the semi, so I don't really give
a why.
But if I had to choose one, I'll choose England to win.
I'm going to go South Africa in our one. And... Yo, I'm going to go England. India are getting away with too much, man. At some point, the cricket 100%. Gods must just come down. Like, come on, man. It's absolute nonsense. But yeah, so we're going to look at a South Africa-England final. I don't know who we're going to play in the semi, but whoever it is, that will be that. So that's that then for episode 5 of 3 Shots in a Dot. Predictions for the semi-finals done. We all think that the Proteas are going to take this one home. Now, if you've enjoyed this, please drop us a like. Hit the subscribe button on YouTube. You can also follow us on audio-only platforms like Audible, Spotify, and Apple Music. Until the next one, please take care. Don't forget to pour a shot and cheers.